Why does a mother weep at her daughter's wedding? Why do we queue for hours to see a painting, stand motionless before a sunset, or feel our chest tighten at a song we've heard a thousand times? Beauty moves us in ways that logic cannot explain, and according to Friedrich Nietzsche's radical first work, it might be the only thing standing between humanity and despair. Written at just 27, The Birth of Tragedy dared to suggest something scandalous, that life's meaning isn't found in morality, reason, or divine purpose, but in art itself. The ancient Greeks knew this secret. They stared unflinchingly at existence's horror and responded not with philosophy or prayer, but with theater. They understood something we've forgotten, that sometimes the truest response to suffering isn't an argument, but a song. Here's Nietzsche's most radical claim, stated almost casually. Existence and the world seem justified only as an aesthetic phenomenon, not as a moral system, not as a rational order, only as art. Look honestly at existence. It contains immense, apparently meaningless suffering. Children die of disease. Earthquakes destroy cities indiscriminately. Species go extinct. Civilizations collapse. From a moral perspective, this seems unjust. From a rational perspective, it seems purposeless. Neither religion's promise of divine justice nor science's mechanical explanations can fully justify this reality. Picture a marble statue, every line perfect, every proportion calculated. This is Apollo, the god of form, reason, and beautiful illusions. Now imagine dissolving into a crowd at a concert, lost in sound and moment. This is Dionysus, the god of intoxication and ecstatic unity. These aren't just artistic styles, but fundamental forces within human nature. The Apollonian impulse creates structure, your daily routine, career identity, the self you present to the world. It says, I am distinct, I have boundaries. The Dionysian impulse yearns to shatter those boundaries in passionate love, spiritual experience, or creative flow. The Greeks initially resisted Dionysian worship, creating Homer's epics of individual heroes with clear identities. Yet their art remained superficial because it denied half of human experience. Only when they embraced both gods did they achieve their greatest creation, tragedy itself. Greek tragedy emerged from the dithyramb, a wild Dionysian chorus where singers became satyrs and social distinctions dissolved. In this musical ecstasy, participants confronted a disturbing truth. Individual existence is illusion, temporary separation from the eternal life force. You will die, your achievements will fade, everyone you love will vanish, yet life flows on. This realization paralyzes. The Greeks' genius was adding the Apollonian element, the tragic hero, Prometheus chained, Oedipus discovering his fate. These beautiful images made Dionysian truth bearable. The hero suffers terribly, yet witnessing this elevates us. Why? Because the hero masks Dionysus himself. Every tragic suffering represents the god's dismemberment, a metaphor for how individuation causes pain. The hero's destruction reveals that while individuals perish, the life force is indestructible. Music carries this message beneath words, creating what Nietzsche calls metaphysical consolation, an aesthetic experience making existence worthwhile despite its horrors. Nietzsche argues Socrates destroyed tragedy through Euripides, who demanded everything be rational and explicable. Where earlier tragedies preserved mystery, the chorus singing truths beyond understanding, Euripides' characters explain their motivations explicitly, plots follow logical causality, and complications resolve through reason, literally lowering gods by Crane as Deus ex machina. This aesthetic Socratism insisted beauty requires understanding, that nothing valuable can be irrational. Socrates' mutation placed hypertrophied logic above all else, believing knowledge is virtue, that understanding reality improves it, that reason solves every mystery. This Socratic optimism replaced tragedy's profound truth with dangerous delusion that life's problems are solvable, suffering stems from ignorance, and sufficient knowledge perfects existence. We've inherited this assumption, our faith that technology will solve climate change, therapy will eliminate depression, information will end conflict. The cost? We lost capacity for genuine tragedy. Modern entertainment offers spectacle, sentimentality, or ironic distance, rarely the metaphysical consolation Greek tragedy provided. After tragedy's death came the Alexandrian Age, named for Alexandria's library, where scholars cataloged works they could never match. This culture of scholarship without creativity dominates today. The Alexandrian man is critic rather than creator, accumulating knowledge, writing dissertations about others' ideas, believing education means memorizing facts. The professor who's published extensively on Shakespeare but never written a poem. This Alexandrian age rests on faith that knowledge solves existence's problems. Yet this faith cannot justify itself. Science cannot prove through scientific methods that truth matters or the universe is comprehensible. This is modern culture's crisis. Despite unprecedented material comfort and technical knowledge, depression, anxiety, and meaninglessness soar. We've lost the mythic horizon that once gave life significance. Neither religion, which we've outgrown, nor science, which cannot address existential questions, provides what tragedy once offered, a way to affirm life despite its suffering. Nietzsche found hope in German music's preservation of Dionysian power. Unlike Italian opera, which subordinated music to text, German composers let music express truths beyond words. Beethoven's Ninth Symphony demonstrates this. Its first three movements speak through pure sound, building tension and release that bypasses intellect. Only in the finale does Beethoven add words, but the music has already conveyed everything essential. Wagner pushed this further. In Tristan und Isolde, the famous Tristan chord, that unresolved, yearning dissonance, expresses the lover's impossible desire more truthfully than any dialogue. The music doesn't illustrate text, it generates myth itself. Nietzsche saw in Wagner the potential rebirth of tragedy, a modern art form providing metaphysical consolation for a disenchanted age. German culture might recover what the Greeks achieved, art that transforms suffering into beauty. This required reconnecting with myth, which modern education had stripped away. The German spirit must reject foreign influences and rediscover its authentic roots in Germanic legends and folk traditions. Art transforms life's value, not by denying horror, but by transfiguring it. Consider musical dissonance. A symphony without discord would be flat. The tension from dissonant notes makes resolution satisfying. Similarly, life's dissonances, suffering, conflict, destruction, contribute to its aesthetic depth. This perspective transcends conventional morality. The Dionysian view recognizes that creation requires destruction, that joy and suffering are inseparable. Like a child building and destroying sandcastles, the universe creates and annihilates without moral purpose, in cosmic play appreciated only aesthetically. This liberates us from both religious moralism and scientific nihilism, affirming existence precisely as it is. Each of us contains both impulses, the desire for form and identity, Apollo, and the longing for dissolution and transcendence, Dionysus. A life dominated by Apollo becomes rigid, all career ambition without depth. Surrendering completely to Dionysus risks madness, the artist who burns brilliantly but destroys themselves. The challenge is integration. You shape yourself as an artist shapes sculpture, guided by taste rather than rules. The goal isn't reaching a fixed state, but engaging in ongoing transformation, balancing structure with fluidity, individual identity with universal connection. This is what Nietzsche later called becoming who you are. Imagine living your life infinitely many times, every joy, every pain, every mundane moment recurring eternally. This is Nietzsche's doctrine of eternal return, When each instant becomes eternally significant, every choice magnifies. You're choosing it not once, but infinitely. This is an aesthetic rather than moral perspective. We affirm life's eternal recurrence not because it leads to improvement or justice, but because life itself, with all its terrors and ecstasies, is beautiful enough to be worth living again and again. This represents the ultimate synthesis of Apollonian and Dionysian wisdom, recognizing both the beauty of individual forms and the eternal flux that creates and destroys them. Can you say yes to your life in its entirety, including its pain and horror, as something worth eternally repeating? The truly life-affirming individual answers yes, transforming even difficulties into aspects of existence's beauty. This is what the Greeks achieved through tragedy. After experiencing Oedipus or Prometheus, an Athenian might say, "How much this people must have suffered to become so beautiful." Modern culture, trapped in Socratic optimism, faces the void that opens when knowledge reaches its limits. We can respond with nihilism or recover the Greeks' courage, facing existence's horror unflinchingly and responding not with arguments but with art, not with explanations but with affirmation. Your life isn't a problem to solve, but a phenomenon to shape, a canvas waiting for you to decide whether it's worth painting again and again, eternally.